Dear Blood River Radio family, wait, has this been a show or not? I would have to rate Joe Wickens as one of the most informed, most detailed guests we've ever had. And listen, we've had a caller, and I'll second the motion. We want Joe to start the second hour with a prayer, and also if he will honor us, he could close out the second hour of the prayer. Take it away. And also, people, we just picked up, everybody knows Gene Andrews. We picked him up. He's gonna ride the ship to the port with us to the second hour. Go ahead, Joe. Take off with that prayer, brother.
Father God, we come again before you. And we just bless your name. We praise you and we give you glory. And we know that you're trying to help us to create heaven on earth. But in the name of your son, Jesus, right now I come before you for, I just sense there are many out there who are hurting, not only hurting physically, hurting emotionally. Those who have just been served or filed divorce, Lord, I pray for them. That they would receive the peace that they need to sustain and go forward. And those who are having breathing problems right now in arthritis, Father, we lift these people up. And particularly, there's one that, I'm just going to say, their left arm, it's like they can hardly move it. And so I ask you in the name of Jesus to bring relief and healing. And so I pray for Gene, right now, that you would give him the wisdom and the words that he needs to explain and to help those of us here who need to hear from him as to what happened, why it happened, and how to recover from it. And so I lift up this second half of the program to you, Father God, and I thank you that we can come before you in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you so much. And before we go right back to you, I'm going to tell Gene was an old Marine. Gene, there were two, you probably already know, there were two Marines that were killed on Liberty. There was Sergeant Jack Raper and Rapper, and also Corporal Edward Reimeyer, United States Marine Corps. They both got killed. The third Marine that was on board that ship, I was able to meet him. You talk about an emotional experience. His name was Bryce Lockwood, a very intelligent fellow. He was decorated, and he's also published several books. I can't remember the name of them right now. But continue on, Joe, if you will. And I know Gene is going to have questions, as I do. So go ahead and continue on with your narrative, please. And also, we can take call-ins. Joe said that if anybody wants to call in and ask him a question, he's ready to rock and roll. So go ahead, Joe.
I do have to admit, I'm somewhat flabbergasted. Nobody ever wanted to hear my story nor hear what I had to say. For what is this, 60 years now, 64 years. It's like it's been an empty void. And Gene, I don't know, we didn't get a chance to tell you on the break, but I did two tours over in Vietnam on the America. So, part of my passion, part of my anxiety comes from both sides of the world. And particularly against the upper brass, Johnson in particular. But, the question that was asked and the statement that was made, it all comes around the issue of the nuclear bombs. Were they launched? Were they readied? Now, I cannot answer for anything on the Saratoga, but I can answer what I saw on the Ameritech, and I said it during the first segment. I did not see any launched in the four planes we reportedly launched. By the time they were launched, I was down in the radar room, so I couldn't see anything else. However, when they were given the order to bring the jets back and put them on, get them back on the deck, it was a pretty stern order, mainly because our Vice Admiral Lawrence Geis, he was not in favor of that. As a matter of fact, he did a very honorable thing from my perspective. He challenged his boss's command, and he told, as I said in the first segment there, he flat out told his boss, from what we heard coming back to us, that's going to take more stars on your shoulder, on your sleeve, or not sleeve, but collar, than yours to tell me to bring those jets back. And that's when he got involved with Robert McNamara and President Johnson. And I repeat that again for the sake of those who might just join, because this is really important. So many times when I was in the military, you just did what you were told. You didn't question it. On the other hand, I questioned a lot of things because I always tried to view from a wider view, and quite frankly, that got me into a lot of trouble. But in the end, I remember I was an E6 at the time, and I remember E9 hunted me down. And he just told me outright, he says, "You know, Joe, when you get to be my age, all you can do is argue." And he said, "Whenever I needed one, I just needed to find you." And I took that as a compliment, which you had to know this guy, a little short guy with a belly that stuck out, is almost as tall as he was. But and he said to me, I'd sail with you, Joe, any day," which is to me quite a compliment.
Absolutely.
Now, one of the things I was surprised as they started to release and declassify information, and here is where we get into speculation and secondhand and more. And so, Gene, I'm going to ask you to jump in here with, you know, and bail me out, help me out. But I, you know, they were talking about the nuclear bombs being on the planes. Again, I don't know what was on the Saratoga. But what I did find out through declassified information, somewhere between 3 and 4 hours before the Liberty was attacked, the logs in Guam showed that 2 B-52 bombers were loaded with bombs, i.e. and nuclear bombs, and they were launched somewhere between 3 and 4 hours. Now, I did a little web search, you know, did the Google type thing, and you can get from Guam to Egypt in 13 hours.
Oh, my gosh. So that's what they were planning. They were going to use the sinking of the Liberty with no survivors, American ship put on the bottom of the Mediterranean, no survivors, no one to contradict their story, and they were going to use that as their excuse to make a nuclear strike on Egypt.
And the second part of that, if you you know, in the first segment that I said, that for those who are new, after they attacked and they called the planes back, they sat there with a hole that was as 24 feet wide by 39 feet, and that's equivalent to your two-car garage door in width or height, in the 39 feet, which would be equivalent to almost a three-story house. And they were hoping that somehow or another that ship would sink. And therefore, we were ordered to stall, and the stall time was 17 hours before any help got there.
Gosh, that has to be one of the most disgusting, despicable, just absolutely make you sick to the stomach events in American history, that the President of the United States would willingly sacrifice those men for a false flag issue to attack another country. Now, as a president and you declare, your country declares war, you know you're going to have some losses, but those losses are in combat and you're fighting against the enemy. But when the president, with the collusion of the Israelis, decides ahead of time to send this ship by itself into the eastern Mediterranean and sacrifice not only the ship, but the 294 sailors and Marines on board that ship, that is something that is just, it's, I don't know, the horror of that and the duplicity of that and the words just fail me that you could use on the radio about somebody that would sink that low to do that to the military personnel of this country. That is just, there's nothing that compares to that, I don't think. So, anyway.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, and that is, and this is an important point, here you've got a spy ship, you know, a listening ship. It was, you know, open market. Everybody knew that it was receiving signals from the air, from the cables, you know, and from all kinds of sources. Typically, that ship would have been protected by
a
destroyer.
Quick break. We have to go to a quick break, Joe. Hold that thought. We'll be right back in a minute, people. This is a riveting story. We're going back to Joe Witkin and Gene Andrews. So feel free to come back.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Dear Blood River Radio family, that's the Marine Corps hymn, and we're playing that to honor the two Marines that were killed on the USS Liberty, and also the Marine that he escaped with his life. Bryce, I think he was Gunny Sergeant Bryce Lockwood. God bless him. And also, we have a Marine here, a former Marine. He's kind of sour on the Marines now, and rightfully so, but we're honoring these guys. We opened up with the Navy Anchors Away, and we've been playing, as you well know, the Marine Corps hymn during the break. But we're going back to Gene right now. Gene's got a very interesting comment he wants to make, Gene Andrews. Go back to you, Gene.
Submarine in the area, and they volunteered that they were going to pick up survivors in the water if need be. And then they were turned down by the United States Navy High Command, and they were claiming that they weren't any, that we would take care of it and that sort of thing. So there were a lot of people that knew what was going on, and it was just up to the Navy and McNamara and Lyon Linden to squelch any kind of information coming out of there. And then they and I remember when it happened. I mean, it made the news and everything. And of course, it was a terrible accident. That's what they said. It was just an accident. And I've never yet been able to understand how you can have an accident with a ship flying a garrison flag and the markings on it and everything else that they had on there. Either the pilots were blind or this was a setup job. And I think it's more of a setup job than they had blind pilots actually flying aircraft. I did have a question for Joe, and you were—I think y'all were talking about—were there any nuclear weapons loaded on any type of aircraft before the attack? Not once word came in that an American ship was under attack, but even before all of this started, when I believe it was about 1,400 hours when the first attack came in on the Liberty.
I have to say I did not see what would have been, we called it a pretty bird, aboard the deck. It means that it was normal bombs are just gray. They got the detonators on them, and you can see that they're just, you know, army green.
Yeah.
Other missiles are just white. However, the nuclear missiles, they are decorated not as a flower, but they are marked in a way that it's, you just don't read it. You can see it from a distance.
Right.
This particular one I saw happened to have a blue band that was, I don't know, I'll guess at least a foot wide that went all the way around it. I still remember seeing it on the back of the aircraft carrier after the first jets were launched. So they did bring one up. It sat there, and again, they moved it after the jets returned. And then they brought up, they had two Skyhawks with pretty bombs on them as we were steaming toward the Liberty. However, we were no longer steaming at full speed. Now, the ship's missiles, on the other hand, because that's what I worked on, we had four launchers, and we were capable of launching two on the port side, two on the starboard side. But we had two conventional missiles brought up and two nuclears. You know, even the guys that worked back there in the missile room were surprised that, as they called it, the pretty bombs. And we had test missiles back there also that were a different color. But those stayed inside the ship from the time we got to general quarters until sometime after everything settled down and the attack supposedly was over and now we were in a rescue mission.
Right.
But that would have been after that 17-hour period.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So, and that's another thing that just—it's almost impossible to believe that the Navy would wait 17 hours to rescue one of their ships or go to their aid. I mean, to me, it seems like when the first bullet struck the Liberty from a strafing run of an aircraft, the ships should have been going at flying speed, full speed, to rescue that ship and protect that ship. And that they didn't or weren't allowed to is just such a despicable, disgusting thing that it's really almost impossible to believe that that would happen. But I'm not quite doubting your word or the men that Eddie talked to that were there. They saw it. They lived through it. They know what happened. But for the general public out there, you just say, what in the world kind of country are we living in that would do something like that to our servicemen? there is a question I wanted to ask you. Now, after all of this happened and the Liberty limped back into port, into dry dock, what were you told, or the crew members on the America, what were you told to say or not say about what had happened?
When we pulled away and they were sure that the ship wasn't going to sink and we took care of the medical issues, we pulled away from the Liberty and left it up to the other ships that were in the area. The captain came online, first of all, before we got to the Liberty. He didn't want to see anybody taking any pictures, and that they were going to be bringing news reporters aboard. And over the broadcast system, he says no one is to take and talk to any reporter nor invite any reporter into an area other than designated for them. And he says, if I find out anybody does that, you will come see me personally. And, you know, as peons, we all knew what that meant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know,
was that Admiral Geist, Joe? Excuse me. Was that Admiral Geist or was that the captain that said that?
That was the captain. Okay. I don't ever remember the admiral talking to us. It was the captain's boat, and he was in charge of the crew. Now, what he did tell us also was that there would be no mail service until further notice. And he said, those of you, and, you know, my wife wrote to my girlfriend, wrote to me every single day. And because we were the, we basically got all the mail for all the ships and then distributed it with the helicopters. It may take you a week and a half to get the current letter. But he told us no mail is going out until further notice. And any of you that decide you want to write a letter, do not seal it. If you seal it, we will tear it open and read it. And if there's anything in here about this, he says, you will come and see me personally. And I don't know anybody that didn't take that very serious.
No, you can't. I mean, where can you go? You can't leave the ship and travel from Tennessee to Alabama or someplace like that. I mean, you're stuck there. What can you do? Oh, no. So it was censorship and threats put against the crew members there not to reveal any information about what had happened. So another mark against the government of this country.
Well, I do have to admit, as one who was in the service, there are some things that are left unsaid. And because we were on blackout, because at that time, we didn't have any information as to who it was. We still were thinking that, you know, somebody said Israel. A whole bunch of us thought, you know, that can't be. They're an ally. Someone else said Egypt. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, all these bombs and missiles and everything else comes up. You don't know. And most of the time, you never knew. You know, even when we went over and did our sorties over off the coast of Vietnam, because I looked on the radars, I could see what was going on, you know, many, many miles away. But because this was a ship in the water and not a plane in the air, we couldn't even see how far away it was. Now, and I guess to answer your question, when they pulled into Malta, I think they intentionally, well, I'm going to say it fairly, there was nothing for us to do. The ship was under the control of whoever was going to pull it, to steer it, to lead it, to guide it. And as far as carrier is concerned, we had no need to be there. So they didn't tell us anything about it.
Well, guys, we have to go to another break. We'll be right back. People, hold on your seats. We got a fantastic interview going on here between Joe Witkins and Gene Andrews. Hold on to your seats.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Lawmakers say they want answers after a new article showed that a Trump-era request for lawmakers' cell phone data was retrieved as the former administration sought out leaks during the Russia probe. The Justice Department's Inspector General is looking into the seizure of House Democrats' metadata during the Trump administration. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco referred the case to the IG. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Dick Durbin, say that former Attorneys General Bill Barr and Jeff Sessions must testify under oath to the committee. The demand came after revelations that the Trump administration had secretly gathered device data from Democratic members and staff of the House Intelligence Committee as they investigated internal leaks during the Russia probe. This is USA Radio News.
Friends, Mike Lindell is a great supporter of conservative radio, but most of all, he's a man who has invented a great USA product that will help you get a great night's sleep. For over 3 years, I've told you how the MyPillow Premium Pillow has changed my life. I get the best sleep of my life. But more importantly, the pillows don't go flat. You can wash them and dry them as many times as you want. They maintain their shape, and they are made in the USA. Here's the best deal you'll ever get on a MyPillow Premium Pillow. $29.98 for a standard or queen size pillow. King size only $5 more. You're saving $40. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, use my promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175. You can save up to 60% on any MyPillow product when you use my promo code USA, or call 1-800-951-8175 and ask for the MyPillow Premium Pillow Special.
As the pandemic begins to subside, Illinois is lifting all capacity limits on bars, restaurants, and other businesses.
Chicago is the largest big city in the country that's fully reopened.
Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot credited the people in her city for getting to this point.
You masked up, you got vaxxed up, and now it's time for you to get up, get out of the house this summer, and fully and safely and enjoy the events of the best city on the planet.
New data shows that more than 68% of Illinois residents 18 and over have received at least one dose, and 51% of adults are fully vaccinated. In Tennessee and North Carolina, the demand for vaccines has slowed down so much that they're now giving back millions of doses to the federal government, even though less than half of the total populations are vaccinated. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Well, dear people, we have reached the halfway mark of the second hour, and I'll tell you what, this has got to be one of the best interviews he's ever done. We got two great people on. You know them, Joe Witkins, a brother of mine, another brother of mine, Gene Andrews. So take off, Gene. You can tell them what we talked about during the break or whatever you want to do, because you've got so many details that you want to cover.
You brought up an interesting point, and it's happened to a lot of people. I know I've had this thrown back in my face, too. So if you're talking to a friend of yours, well, I should say a former friend of yours.
Yeah, former friend.
About what the Israelis had done and what a low-down deal that was, and they were talking, and your friend says, well, I'll never stand against Israel. It's such a great ally of ours. And I thought, you know, how could an ally do something like that to our military personnel? And that's not an ally you want to have. And I was saying the point we were trying to make during the break is, you know, it's suicidal to have a foreign country dictate your foreign policy. And I don't care if it's Great Britain or Israel or the examples I used were Guatemala and the Fiji Islands. You just don't have a foreign country dictate your foreign policy. You're just asking for a disaster because they're going to take care of their interests first. And if it ruins your country, if it sacrifices your military people, if it bankrupts your treasury, too bad. They're going to look out for their interests first, and the Israelis always have. And we pour billions into that country every year, and then they turn around and buy off our politicians to keep them quiet and, you know, make lap dogs out of our politicians. And I remember Netanyahu got up in front of their parliament one time and said, don't worry about the American Congress. We own the American Congress.
Yes.
And not one single person in the Senate or the House stood up and said, hey, buddy, you don't own me. You may own the rest of them, but you don't own me. Not a one of them. They all ran under the porch like a whipped dog with their tail stuck between their legs. So then you see what they did to, like, these men that we lost on the Liberty and were wounded and then have gone through such hell after it was over. And Joe was talking about, you know, they were threatened with disciplinary action being brought before the captain of the ship. And that's not like staying after school and writing 100 times, I will not talk in class. That's a lot worse than something like that. You could be court-martialed. You could go to prison or the brig. That is quite a threat in the military to go before the commanding officer. So that is really a serious threat against the personnel of that ship. Get back to Joe. I want him to take the lead on this. We were talking about the announcement that was made to the crew on the America after all of this happened, and you were forbidden to talk to the news reporters or anyone on the outside, had mail held up. If you were sending anything, it had to be in an unsealed envelope, and they would read it to make sure it wasn't going to mention this. After, say, 2 months or so, going to your next duty assignment or the next 6 months or the next year, when you were sent to your next duty assignment, were there any restrictions on you there about what you could say or do, or did any of this come up again through your next maybe one, two, or three duty assignments?
Not that I remember, not specifically about the Liberty. Our duty assignments on the America, they kept us pretty busy, you know, and idle hands is the hands of the devil or something like that. But they kept us really busy. But I do not remember them saying anything about it, nor anybody bringing it up. Now you're making me to think about this. I'd have to ask my wife to see how long it was that we were out of the mail scenario. But
yeah.
Our ship went over into the Med in, when was it, January? And we normally would put in 9 months, so we're talking September before we left the Med. So, you know, other than what the reporters reported, there probably wasn't a whole much more that they would seek out of us, because everything was classified and it was all, what's the word that I want, well organized to make it sound like it was an accident, that Johnson had nothing to do with it. To answer a question that came up a little earlier, it was Admiral Martin who basically told us, you know, it's the two carrier groups, not to move forward other than at a certain speed.
Yes, sir.
And he was in charge of the Sixth Fleet.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So they were still hoping that somehow or another the Liberty was going to sink and take down all the crew members with it, and then their little scheme would come to fruition then. If there were no survivors. So, yeah, I can see why they didn't want you to make any kind of effort, or why they called back the airstrikes that were launched off of the two carriers there. Now, was it there on the America, they just launched one airstrike, is that correct, or one flight?
Yeah, it was four jets, the ready caps, and then the backups to that.
Right.
On the Saratoga, and in the declassified information, Admiral Martin authorized four jets from each carrier, and the captain of the Saratoga sent eight of them off. And that's why I said, you know, the first question that came about, was there nukes? I don't know what the Saratoga sent.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But and you said you were in the radio compartment, I mean the radar compartment. So were you in the superstructure or down below decks?
I was actually right underneath the island. As I told you, I started off in Vulture's Row up there, you know, up and high in the island. And then our main radar room was right underneath the island.
That's it, yes, sir.
So we were basically, there was 6 inches of steel between us and the flight deck.
Flight deck, right, right. Then I'm always been curious about this. Then after you left the Med, I guess y'all came back to Norfolk. That would have been your home port there.
Yes.
And then had leave. And then was your next assignment being sent to Southeast Asia?
We had to do, if I recall it right, we had to do some carrier quals down by Guantanamo. And that's basically to let the new pilots learn how to land on the carrier. And then we left for the, the Asian area. It was in, I think it was late 68. And I'm way off on the dates probably, so don't quote me yet, those of you who are doing Google right now. But we did go over there 68, 69, and then 70, 71.
Yes, sir. When I was over there in 69, how come you didn't come by and say hello to us? We'd been glad to see you there.
He should have gave you a ride on a jet plane. The least he could have done.
You couldn't land that jet out in the mud or where we were. Gosh, I can't understand it.
They could have dropped a rope down and got you the hell out of there. But anyway,
well, I'd have grabbed that rope, too, I guarantee that.
Amen, brother. Oh,
here's one reason why I probably didn't want to go over there. I was up in a helicopter, and we were doing adjusting of the radars and the missile systems. And I'm riding in a helicopter, and I got this little one-inch belt strapped to my back. The pilot says to us, "Hey, look down there." And all you see is this rope in the water. Now, we're up probably 8,000 feet, something like that. And he says, "You know what that is?" And then he named them off. And, Gene, maybe you know. He says, "That's about a mile long of red snakes."
Wow.
Going from one island to the other. And he says, "They're very venomous."
Yeah, they had some horrible snakes over there. I thought they had one called a three-stepper. And they said if you got bitten by it, you had about 3 steps before it, you know, the venom got you. And just, we've had some very serious discussions, but just one anecdote that happened. I hadn't been there more than a month, and I was assigned as officer of the day. So what you would do, you would go out on the perimeter and check the bunkers on your section of the perimeter while it was still twilight. So if something happened at night, you knew exactly where you wanted to go, and you weren't stumbling around in the dark. So we went to the first two bunkers and checked it out, and everything was okay, and talked to the Marines there, were on sentry duty and everything. We're going to the third one. The sergeant and I were, he was in the security there. And, we'll finish it up when we come back off the break there. I hear the music.
Yes, I love to hear those stories. Be right back, folks. I think you're really enjoying this. I know I surely am.
This is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help. And thank you for joining the fight.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Hey, guys. Dear Blood River Radio audience, man, this is, we're winding, this is our last break. You know, I just like to throw a little tidbit out there. A sailor by the name of Ernie Gallo at the reunion in Pensacola told the audience, told me that one salient point we should take away from this, with the Israelis getting away scot-free with killing, murdering, and torturing our American servicemen in cold blood, never any question about it. They got away with it scot-free. He said, what it does, and this is the big point, he said, it opens the door for yet another attack like that. And with that, I'm going to go back to you, Gene.
Oh, okay. Before the break, we were just trying to add a little bit of humor to it. The first night I was officer of the day, checking the bunkers on the perimeter, first two, no problem. Headed toward the third one, hear all these gunshots. I mean, it's full automatic. Somebody flipped that selector switch, and they were just blasting away. And I hadn't been in country not even 2 months yet. I thought, holy cow, here comes Ho Chi Minh and the whole North Vietnamese army right over the top of us coming through the wire. We get up to this bunker, and there's dust and smoke coming out of there, and there must be 1,500 holes in the sandbags and sand just pouring out. And I'm going, what in the world is going on? And this kid in there goes, watch out, Lieutenant. It's a three-stepper. It's a three-stepper. That snake over there, don't step on it. And he must have expended 200 rounds of ammunition. The snake was still coiled up there. He hadn't hit anything. Not a real good advertisement for Marine Corps marksmanship. And so this old sergeant just takes an entrenching tool and goes over there and just whacks that snake and smashes it out flat, and then picks it up by the tail and throws it out of there. So that was my first night as officer of the day, and Joe was talking about all the poisonous snakes they saw in the water. So that was my encounter with the first poisonous snake in Vietnam. So we'll turn it back over to Joe. Anything that he needs to say to our audience to wrap up the program this evening in the last segment. And then I think Eddie wanted to finish up with something there to very, very well done closing to our program tonight. So, Joe, I'll turn it back over to you and stay out of your way.
Go ahead, Joe.
I guess the thought that comes to my mind is that, okay, we can talk about the mechanics. We can talk about the timing. We can talk about the destruction. As I'm saying this, I still remember talking to the survivors, and not to make this too gruesome, but the point is this is reality. They not only did they survive, but they had to go back into the hole once they got into dry dock and all the water drained out of it and remove the bodies that were still down there and the parts thereof. And I remember one guy the last night that we were there at the reunion, and he just, I guess he was somewhere early 80s, and he was showing some pictures of his best friend. And in the movie, he sacrificing liberty, he pointed out to us who his best friend was. And when the bomb went off, it blew his body up to the top of the room, and there he was hanging after 4 days of, or 5 days of floating in salt water. And because it was such a high security area, only the CTs could go down there. And he was talking about how he had to take his best friend off of this, I'll call it a pipe, it might have been a wire, and carry him out to where the dry dock base was. And we forget about the damage that was done mentally to the people. But there was more than just the bombs. They had to, because of the security area, they had to reassemble all of the bodies that were in there. There was 25 bodies in that particular area. And they hauled out 128 bags of body parts.
Yes.
And this is why it's such an atrocity. And then one of the guys that was there, after we imbibed in a few, he began telling about how he had to, you know, here was a leg inside of a shoe, and they matched it up to this guy because of the pants and the arm sleeve and the shirts. And one thing that, you know, for anybody that goes into service, I don't care if it's the Liberty or Army, Marines, or even the Coast Guard, because one of my best fishing buddies was in the Coast Guard. What many of the men and women go through are the mental strain, and the mental wounds are probably worse than the physical.
Yes.
Amen. Yes.
And here is where, as Christians, you know, we can, Gene, I loved your thing on establishing the politics and the direction, you know, that we're going to go, you know, from, the political perspective. But as Christians, I would say, let's not take this event, and there's two things I think, let's not take this event and forget what the families went through afterwards.
Amen.
And some of them, it's, you know, their parents would be in the 90s now. I'm in my 70s. I was 19 at the time, for those of you who are listening, to put it in a time perspective. Some of them never had a chance to have children. Others have children that are my own sons and daughter age. Some of them now have grandchildren. And now, what do you tell them? And I thank God for guys like Eddie and for Matt, who put together the show, and those who are trying to hold accountable Israel. Whether you are for them, against them, or whatever have you, the point is, one form of humans were inhuman to another form. And that would be the same thing for Vietnam. And this is where we have evolved to, is that, quoting President Johnson, I was just hoping that we could show them that we could kill more of them than they could kill of us.
Yeah, it was all about the body count. That's it.
Gene, in the first part of the show, Joe said that whole statement, President Johnson was quoted as saying he really didn't care about winning the war. He just wanted to show them that they could kill more of the Vietnamese than the Vietnamese could kill of us. And I'd like to say one more thing, too, and you people might be able to figure it out pretty easily while I have no more Baptist friends. I probably shouldn't have said it because it might have been too rough. Maybe I crossed the line if I did. Too bad.
I don't believe you ever do that, Eddie. Come on now.
No. Well, couple of these Southern Baptists.
You already know them better than I do.
Yeah, I gave a pretty hot talk down there, man. But anyway, I hope I didn't go overboard in my talk down there. But anyway, I told some of these Southern Baptist friends of mine that I've just got lost patience trying to debate with them. I said, well, I'll tell you what, God only forbid a repeat of United States Liberty or enough similar incident that we have 18, 17, 18, 19, 20, 25-year-old kids coming back. Burnt beyond recognition, 15 different body parts. If that happens, God help me of being so cruel. I hope they bring the body bag back to your church and empties the body bag out with about 20 parts of about 25 different sailors and say, now pick your son out from this bunch of stuff if you can, ma'am. But by the way, you just remember, you can't stand against Israel. You got to stand with Israel. And I'm going to shut the hell up now and go back to you, Joe.
How do I recover from that one? you know what's interesting, Eddie, is that your passion, I think, is right. Righteous anger is not wrong. And remember, we have done that recently. It's called Afghanistan and Iraq. That's exactly what they've done from the roadside bomb. So we haven't really changed a whole lot. All we did was change the dates, change the places, and change the names. And I do think that the most important thing is that we learn from our experiences and learn from our history. Otherwise, as they say, we'll just repeat it. And here is where, when you pray, I would say to your listeners, when you pray, be careful that you're not using the blunderbuss. And for those of you who don't know what it is, that's what they used in the early American wars. It's just a tube, and they put some gunpowder in it, and they throw a whole bunch of rocks in and pull the trigger, and the stuff just flies all over the place. So when you pray, don't pray at God. Pray to Him. And pray specifically what you're looking for. And, it's the let thy will be done, not mine. And Eddie, here's where I would pray for shows like yours that has the courage to take on the tough, raw subjects. And quite frankly, I really, I'm proud of you. You're going to find enemies. We're all going to find enemies. And that's what the life of Christ is really all about, is, let's face it, every one of the apostles were killed except John. And I think not including John, all but one of them were beheaded or severely beaten to death. And that's humanity. It's not right. But here's go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Every generation goes through that. I remember my father talking about when he was a little boy and lived in Paris, Tennessee, over in West Tennessee, two brothers had gone to World War One. They had been gassed. And he can remember seeing them sitting on the front porch of the house across the street from him, coughing up blood and coughing up their lungs until eventually both of those brothers died. And so there was another situation where we slaughtered our young men in a war that we probably should have never been in. And yet they were just looked upon as cannon fodder, or, send them over there for the war to end all wars, or whatever slogan they were using back then. And we never learn. Every generation has to go through this over and over and over again.
Y'all, since we've run out of time, I don't have time to read the names of all the sailors, but I'm going to read the names of the two Marines again that were slaughtered on USS Liberty, June the 8th, 1967. Sergeant Jack Rapper, United States Marine Corps. Corporal Edward Raymeyer, United States Marine Corps. And for our dear brother, Bryce Lockwood, whose mind will never be right, Gunny Sergeant Bryce Lockwood. God bless you, people. Thank you so much, Joe. Thank you, Gene. This has been, probably the most hot interview we've ever had.